Welcome to Madlit Musings, the podcast where we dive into the minds of authors, exploring the profound realms of faith, social issues, and the delightful world of entertainment. I'm your host, Jamie Jill Wright, and on this literary journey, you never quite know what you're going to get. Head on over to YouTube where you can check out your favorite authors and yours truly as we chat up about books, about all the strange and weird subjects we like to talk about here at Madlit Musings. And you can even see our faces because it's video, because it's YouTube. So go check it out, Madlit Musings, right now. Are you still here? Go, check it out. It's on YouTube. Hey everyone, it is Jamie Jill Wright here with another episode of Madlit Musings. And today I have my good friend Kara Putman with me. Hey, Kara.
Hello. Thanks so much for having me, Jamie. It's always great to be with you.
It's fun to be here. And I feel like we're reciprocating. Like, I've been on your podcast, Book Talk with Kara Putman. That's a plug. Everybody go check it out. And now I finally get to have you on mine. So I'm excited. This is good.
No, it's always fun to have you on. And I love talking about your books. And so much fun just getting to dig deep into what makes our books fun and unique and different. And yours are so ghostly and mine are not.
No, yours aren't. But I, you know, that's one of the reasons I love to read your suspense, because yours are, there's an element of law involved because you're a lawyer, right? And this is The Vanished. Look at that. I love it. I love that cover too. It looks so great. For those of you who are listening and you're on a podcast and not watching on YouTube, you can hop over to the YouTube channel, Madlit Musings, and see the book cover because it's cool.
It's so cool. The publisher did a great job because the book has, it's very much the legal suspense because that's kind of where I've been leaning the last couple of years, but I was able to pull in my love for art as well. Mm-hmm. And so it was really fun when I got the first draft of the cover, because you never know which direction a publisher is going to go. I don't know that readers understand how little control that as authors we have on details like that. We fill out you know, detailed questionnaires, but then it's kind of like sending it into a void and you're like, what are you going to do to my baby? You know, what's it going to look like? What's it going to, you know, how are you going to package it? And the backdrop on the cover is actually like paint textured. It looks like a canvas.
Yes.
And then they overlaid like a heroine and a what looks like a court or a museum, depending on how you want to look at it, on kind of the top of this artsy canvas paint textured kind of backdrop. And I just was like, I almost squealed when I saw it because it's just perfect.
Yeah. There's like, you get your book covers and there's covers that I've received where I'm like, oh, I love it. It's beautiful. I love it. And then there's that cover that comes and you open and you're like, oh, your breath catches, your heart stops beating for a second. You're like, this is a work of art in and of itself.
Yeah. And then there are those where you're like, and this is not it at all.
Right. So I had one of those.
And you're like, this is it.
Yes.
It's such a good feeling. And I've been fortunate because I've had many more where it's that catch where you're like, oh my gosh, they got it.
Yeah.
Than the one where you're like, oh no, how do I help fix this? And so, you know, it's so special when you're like, oh my gosh, this captures, it gives people a feel for what this story is all about. And so it's such a special feeling.
Yeah, no, I love that. I had one book cover come through and it wasn't like an ew. It was just it was absolutely gorgeous, but I was like, this is too pretty. Like, it's too romantic for my book. Yeah, so like, you've got those
how do
two.
How do we make it eerie?
Right. You know, you have to look at book covers and be like, you want it to be great, but you also want it to reflect the mood.
Yeah.
And your book, like, so the book cover that you have with The Vanished, which is the book we're talking about, it's The Vanished. It's published by Kriegel Publications. Comes out April 16th. But the cool thing is, what I loved about it is the silhouette of the heroine is almost black. So it gives you that vanished feeling, like she was there, but she's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And I love that.
And it's fun because, you know, it's kind of going into this idea of who owns art and what happens when it disappears and then it's recovered and it suddenly appears and who owns it. And these kind of deep ideas. And what was so fun is I've been in love with the World War II and I've been in love
Right.
with art for a long time, but I've been writing contemporary. So one of my award-winning books back in 2015 was Shadow by Grace, which it
Yes.
focuses on the Monuments Men during World War II. And then, you pull forward to last year in September, I had a novella in a collection with Kriegel where they asked me to write another book set during World War II. And I got to again look at the
Right.
Monuments Men, but at a different time period with what were they doing at the end of the war. And so the Monuments Men were really focused on what do we do during this, a full invasion of, everybody's fighting each other, but it's a totally different kind of war. Everything's being bombed and there's this decimation happening on a scale that hadn't been seen before. And so there's this focus on how do we save Western civilization, essentially?
Yeah,
How do we
yeah.
save these locations, this art? And so there, it was really interesting to dive into with We Three Kings and Beauty Bright specifically. How did they go about actually returning the art after it
Right.
had been reclaimed,
Yeah.
and kind of those races that we saw with the movie with George Clooney, but then also in the book I'd written, the idea of racing to save the art, but then how do you actually return it? So then with The Vanish, I'm actually looking at museums are still wrestling with the kind of the leftovers of this whole concept of art disappeared. It's still a concept that's very much being dealt with today. In
Yeah.
fact, I was talking with some of our art historian, museum conservation folks here at Purdue just a couple weeks ago, and they were talking about the Met in New York is dealing with that just in the
Wow.
last few weeks with someone who had made a donation. And there are some serious provenance issues with some of the art. And they're and the, this particular person is just like, I'm not dealing with it. It's good. You're just going to have to trust me. And so these are
Oh,
still very real issues,
yeah.
not all related to the war. And so those are some of the things I'm diving into. And you should have seen the stack of research books. I mean,
Oh, I can only imagine. I can only
I
imagine.
was having way too much fun digging into just the stories, but then the law, and then having to throw out all these things that I wanted to pull into the book
Right.
because y'all might not geek out on it as much as I was.
Well, and there's only so much you can put into a book before it becomes a documentary instead of a fiction
Exactly.
novel.
Yeah, you don't want a full 3-credit class on
Yes.
what do we
Yes.
do when there's a question about who owns the art. But it was so fun to really kind of dive into it and explore it. And if you've seen like the movie The Woman in Gold, and there's all these different ways that people have approached it at different points in time. And so, but what do we do? And it's still very current and very real and something
Yeah.
that we're confronting. And then, of course, you've got to murder some people and add in
Oh,
some
of course.
romance and weave it all
Right.
together. And that's a little bit of what's going on in The Vanish.
You can't have art and the rescue of old classic art without some murder. I mean, it's
Of
just
course not.
inevitable.
Yeah, especially if I'm writing it.
Right, exactly. I actually thought of you the other day, though, and I was thinking of The Vanish, and this is going to be the weirdest connection, so bear with me. But I was watching Denzel Washington's movie, The Equalizer 2. So it's the second Equalizer, which
Okay.
is an extremely violent movie. It's just one of those movies where the guy goes and tries to equalize all the vengeance in the world. But what's funny is he finds these people that need help. And he built this relationship because he's like a Lyft driver or something. He builds this relationship with this 90-some-year-old man who is consistently going to court on a regular basis to fight for ownership of a painting that has been circulating since the war. And so he's telling, and this is a completely side story. Like, this isn't even the main thrust of the movie. And I'm going,
Oh, wow.
that's the one I want to watch. Like, can we make that into a movie? Because
Yeah.
he's telling Denzel Washington's character about this painting and how he just wants to get it back because it has a connection to his sister who he lost in one of the camps during the war. And when he was 9, his sister was his older sister and she was protective, blah, blah, blah. Movie goes on. And you can see during this movie, while Denzel is doing all this other stuff to equalize the world, he's also sending emails about this man and his painting to a friend in high places. Then at the end of the movie, that shows this man. It's like the wrap-up scene. He's sitting in his assisted living environment, and the manager comes in and is giving him his typical, I know that you go after the painting on a regular basis, and you have to understand there are things that just can't be overcome in ownership with classic art. And so he kind of takes this man on this journey, which you can tell he's done before. And he goes, but we did have something turn up just out of the blue. And then this old lady comes in the room, and it's his sister who he hasn't seen. So Denzel Washington set out to try and find the painting and
That
get
is not.
ownership, and he found his sister instead. And that's how the movie ends. Like, this old man is like holding on to his sister and they're crying. And I'm like, I want this into a movie. And I'm like, I've got to tell Kara about this.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing.
I
So maybe
know.
I'll watch those scenes of the
Yes, just
movie
watch
and
those
sit with it.
scenes. Yes.
That sounds so beautiful and so redemptive in the
It
middle
was.
of the rest of it. That's
Right.
so cool.
Right. It was. And I think the writers of the screenplay did that for that purpose,
Oh,
to
of
bring
course,
that
because it gives you that
redemption.
opportunity. I mean, think about it as a storyteller, it gives you that opportunity to breathe and
Right.
to see this character who could be seen as potentially the bad guy, the redemptive side of him.
Right. 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 And it was so cool because you also saw the threads of, they did a good job very subtly showing the threads of lost art, but how the lost art had such sentimental and deep connection to the people who were the original owners for whatever purpose. So I thought that was really cool too. And it felt like it tied a little bit into where you've gone with some of your books.
And I think that's one of the reasons that I keep kind of coming back to it is because each piece of art actually tells the story of the family.
Yeah.
And so there's a reason it's gone missing. There's a story behind its disappearance. And when it's tied to World War II, it's usually because there's a plaque in front of the home. And so if you're in Europe, and I've seen these plaques in Germany, in Holland, in Italy, there is a plaque in front of many apartment buildings and homes where if you, I've learned you look down, you look up. When you're in Europe, you always look down. But when
Yeah.
you're looking down, I'm looking for the little, and they're about this size. They're about, for those of you listening, like 3 by 3 inch little brass or some kind of bronze kind of tile that's put into the sidewalk, and on it will be inscribed the name of the Jewish person who was taken from that location, their date of birth, their date of death, and where they, which camp they were taken to, and when they were, why they were killed, and if, were they killed at the camp, did they die in transit, something like that. And so it can be very sobering if you know to watch for those, because you can see, kind of the, in like these little snapshots of these little 3 by 3 squares, in walking by in Hanover, Germany, and you'd see like in front of one building, you'd see like a 9 by 9 grid,
Oof.
or I guess a 3 by 3 grid.
Yeah.
Here was a location where there was many Jewish people who had been taken. And then you'll go blocks, but then you'd be in Rome and you'd see another grid, or in Florence, and saw some of those in, Holland as well. And so that's the kind of thing that each of those paintings or those pieces of art can represent as well. But it's not just restricted to the war, because provenance applies. I mean, there's, you go to the Vatican Museum, and there's a huge dispute, the same thing at the British Museum of, okay, well, these pieces of art were taken in conquest. And so there's kind of this dispute over, well, should they be returned to the civilizations they were taken from? And there's a real question about that. And so you can look at it and go, should it be returned to Egypt? Should it be returned to the whoever it would be the owner in like the Mayan civilization now? And I'm like, well, there's also a reality that they may not still exist if they hadn't been relocated, but then what do we do with them now? And so there's these huge ethical, legal, cultural questions surrounding art and the ownership. And then there's the stories. And I think that's why I find it so interesting.
Oh, that's thrilling. So, okay, so take us into your story a little bit then, 'cause we've danced around all the topics within the story as far as the art goes, but take us a little bit into what your actual story is about, who your heroine is, and go from there.
Yeah, so the heroine is a young woman in her late 20s, turning 30, who is an attorney who has to return home because she made a mistake. And so she's returning home kind of with her tail between her legs, going, "This is not where I wanted to be." And returning to a fictional small town, kind of bedroom community outside of DC. And she left for a reason that kind of starts spooling out over the course of the story. And so she's been in a big high-powered firm, and now she's in rural Virginia going, "What am I doing here?" And has to kind of create a space for herself. And the hero is a curator of a museum for a college. And so he's at a curator for a museum in a college, and he has a guardianship of his nephew. And that kind of comes into play throughout the story as well. But they kind of collide because, as the curator for the museum, at the opening of a show, the first show that he's like in charge of, an old woman standing in front of a painting and going, "That belonged to my family." And so he needs an attorney and she needs a client. And they end up finding each other and having to kind of work through this. And then there's all these other things going on. Secrets and all kinds of things. So it's
Secrets and
a,
lies, and that's about all we can say without creating spoilers.
yes, exactly. But there's it, but you know, there's secrets from her past, and there's a lot of questions regarding the nephew, and there's just all these things going on. And so, but she's also stepping back into a community that she grew up in, and there's the tension with that. And I think a lot of us know that, you know, anytime you go back home, no matter how good your childhood was, there are things you don't want to go back to. And so, and in her situation, it's not all good, but it's not all bad. And so, and she's got this great grandmother. The grandmother was so much fun to write, just a really cool character.
Don't
And
you love those characters that are such a
yeah.
hoot, and you're just like, I just kind of want to stay with this person forever.
Yeah. And it was really fun because I was writing her right after losing my grandmother. And
Oh,
so it was just really sweet because, in a lot of
yeah.
ways, I mean, my grandma was just amazing. And so I was imagining my grandma as I was writing that grandma. And so it was just a fun kind of way to pay tribute to her.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, so it was neat. And then it's a part of Virginia that I know well from having lived there for 8 years, but it's not in DC. It's very specifically kind of a bedroom community out in the Shenandoah, right on the edge of the Shenandoahs.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful area too. Okay, so that's really cool. So anyone who wants to read about art, suspense, law, all of that will really enjoy this. I love Kara Putnam's books. I don't think
Thank
I've made
you.
that a secret. But okay, so one of the thoughts that went through my mind though as we were talking here is, and this is a deep one, so get ready. Why do you think art is important to culture, especially from the perspective of a believer who might make the argument that it's something we can't take with us eternally? So you could say it's storing up our treasures on earth instead of heaven. So why would art be so important to culture and us as a community of Christ?
That's such a really interesting question.
I gave you no warning on that either.
Yeah.
Kara's like, thanks, Jamie.
No, but you know, it's a really good one because, you know, it really wasn't until I took an art appreciation class in college that I started going, "Oh, art's kind of cool." My mom would drag us to museums because we were homeschooled, and she was like, "You must go to museums." And I'm like, "Museums, yuck." And then I started learning about art, and it's been really fun because of taking students on study abroad. My kids have grown up. My daughter, my oldest, is actually in an art appreciation class right now,
Oh, cool.
and she's having the fun experience of going, "Oh, I've actually seen that in the
Nice.
museum. I've seen
Yes.
that." Because we've gone to places like the Uffizi in Florence and the Vatican museums and the British Museum, and The thrill this last in the last 6 months was going to the Van Gogh Museum in Amsterdam when I was
Neat.
there for a conference. And
Yeah.
there's something about seeing it versus just like seeing it on the
Right.
screen or whatever.
Yeah.
But what I would say is there is something about the creative process that as writers, I'm sure you experience this. Eric Little would say, I sense God's pleasure when I run, and I sense God's pleasure when I write. I think a lot of us, when we're creating, we're tapping into the creative nature of God, and we're reflecting that piece of his character. And so for all of us, it's different. It shows up in different ways. Some of us, it's when we're baking. Some of us, it's when we're designing our house and creating a welcoming environment. For others of us, it's writing or it's painting or it's ceramics or whatever. It could be how you plant your flowers in front of your house, but all of it reflects the creative nature of God. And so there's something about art that, like, literally going to the Van Gogh Museum, and I've always loved Van Gogh, but you could see, and the quotes that they had paired with his art, he was the son of a pastor. And his journey, I mean, there was a lot of brokenness in him, but there was also in his art, you can see him seeking God. And it's part of how he communicated with God. And when I'm standing in front of a landscapes aren't necessarily my favorite, but when I'm standing in front of them, I can see God because I'm seeing a representation of his creation. And when I'm standing in front of a 12th century Italian altarpiece, I can laugh at how the feet are anchored to the ground. I can laugh at how they've painted in the patron who paid for the art into the manger scene.
Right.
They weren't there.
Right.
But I can also be like, but it's art at that time was how people learned the Bible because they couldn't read.
That's
And
so
so
true.
art was how people learned the stories of the Bible. There wasn't a printing press. People didn't know how to read. And so art has played a pivotal role across history. And so there's value in that. And it's a part of our context. It's a part of knowing where we've come from. And I don't have to love it all, but I can still see beauty in it. I can still see humanity in it. And I can still find value in it. And so I think there's still something worth saving and treasuring, even if it's not going to heaven with me. There's going to be art in heaven that makes everything here a faint shadow. But I also believe that because God's created that need for beauty in us, I think he smiles when we take the time to create art.
I love
That
that.
he designed us with that right brain need to create. And he smiles when we're activating that.
So in a sense, art becomes a picture into the heart of God in a
I think
big,
it
deep
does.
way. Yeah. I love that. What a great answer. You've solved all my problems.
Don't know about that. That's my like initial reaction.
No, I think it's a great one though, because I'll have conversations with individuals who are like, we shouldn't be spending so much time trying to preserve all these things that are just, the evangelical term is they're just gonna burn anyway, And yeah, there's truth to that. So then you're kind of like, well, I don't like that argument, but I don't know how to argue against it, but I feel like I should be able to, right? Because there
Well,
is value in that.
and I think there is something too, you never know what God's going to use to reach someone's heart. And so sometimes it's the beauty of a mountain. Sometimes it's, another person. But God can use anything to reach someone. And so, there's something to the beauty of sitting in a museum and being confronted. I think it was Salvador Dali. There's a crucifix that he painted that's just, I'll never forget standing in front of it. I forget who the painter was. I'm pretty sure it was Salvador Dali, but I remember standing in front of it going, I would have never put that painter with this image of Christ. And yet, there are people who will go into a museum and look at great art who would never walk into a church. And maybe that's where God's going to prick their heart. And so I think that has value.
Well, on that note, hold up your book again so we can see it if we're on YouTube. You're all going to want to get The
The
Vanished because if this conversation hasn't already convinced you, the book cover should.
Vanished.
but it's The
It's
Vanished by
beautiful.
Kara Putman. And this is the first in another two more coming in
Yeah.
this trilogy.
Yeah, I'm
Okay.
working on edits for the next one right now.
Yay.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Good. All right. So people can order this anywhere books are
Yeah, it's
sold.
available everywhere. So you can support your favorite indie bookstore. You can go to Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Books a Million, wherever you like to get your books.
Right. And an easy place if you can't remember where to go is just go to karaputman.com because you've got links all right
Absolutely.
there. Yes. Kara, thank you so much for being here. This was just a blast, and we will have you back with book two when
Thank
that's
you so
ready.
much, and thanks for having me. It's always a joy to get to spend time with you, Jamie.
Thank you for joining Mad Lit Musings, where every conversation is a journey and every book is a new adventure. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast player or check us out on YouTube, and let's explore the fascinating intersection of faith, society, and storytelling together.